Well, good morning. Pastor Mary is over with our big kids. It's always a, when you are a pastor and you have to miss a Sunday, either with your congregation or if you're a children's pastor and you have to miss a Sunday with your kids, it's always a little nerve-wracking just thinking, what's going to happen? Who's going to flip a chair? Who's going to pick their nose and put it on somebody else? But these are the things that go through my mind, but it is a blessing, and I'm so thankful that Pastor Mary is there to preach to our kids, and they are in good hands, and our littles, our Discovery Littles, are with Misty Branch this morning, and I know that they're all having a great time together. A couple of months ago, right before the summer hit, the kids and I did a series together, and we called it Prophets and Kings. And really, we only had enough time to talk about two prophets and one king, because there's a ton in the Bible. But we had so much fun with it, and we learned so much together. And when we finished the series, as I was writing the last sermon, I couldn't let go. There was a particular passage that wouldn't let me go. I couldn't stop thinking about it. I couldn't stop reading and studying more and more about it. And as I would work on schoolwork, it seemed like this subject that went with this passage just kept coming up and up. And I couldn't let this Bible hero go, and specifically this story, this passage. And when Pastor Darren divvied out the Sundays for us to preach during his sabbatical, I already knew that one of those Sundays I was going to have to preach on this story. And I know it was because God and I aren't done with this story yet. Sometimes God brings us to certain stories, to certain passages, to certain points in his word for a season. It might be to prepare us for what's coming. It might be to comfort us, to speak to us, to challenge us and to change us. Or it might be for a message that we're to give to someone else, a message to share, a message to encourage. And who knows, maybe I still will not be done with this. That would make month number three. So maybe after this Sunday, God and I are still going to work together on this passage. But I want you to go ahead and turn your Bibles to 1 Kings chapter 19. And we're going to camp out here and we're going to focus on this main story. But before we do, we have to understand what has been happening to the people of God and specifically to our Bible hero today, Elijah the prophet. In this particular point in the history of Israel, in the history of the people of God, they have had a bunch of kings, starting with their first king, King Saul, and all the way through a bunch of different and funny names. Some of those kings have been really good. Some of those kings have led the people of God in a godly way. Some of them have led them to victories where they have acquired more land, they've acquired more treasure, and they've acquired blessings. Some of those kings had led them to spiritual victories where they have decided that they are going to worship God. But if I'm going to be completely honest with you, most of the kings that Israel had, most of the kings that Israel had on the throne were bad kings. Were kings that led the people of God in places where they should not have gone, who led the people of God to do things and to worship things that they should not have done. And at this point in this story, at this point in the history of the people of God, King Ahab is on the throne. And he is married to a rather nasty woman, Queen Jezebel. Ahab and Jezebel together have desecrated the holy temple. Jezebel came, and when she married King Ahab, she came worshiping and being a follower of Baal, a fake god, a follower of Asherah, a fake god. And they have put up in the holy temple, the temple that was built, all of the people's money had been saved and saved and saved, and they have put in the holy temple idols and have invited the people of God to choose to worship whoever they want. So a person could go to the temple of God and could go before all of the altar, all of the pieces that went into the temple, and they could worship God. But they could also turn around and see the idol to Baal and worship Baal. Then they could turn around and see the idol to Asherah, and they could worship them. They give the people of God the invitation to worship whoever. And the people of God are very malleable. I wish they weren't. but they choose to worship these fake gods. And it's in this time that God calls Elisha to be a prophet, to bring messages to the people, to be a figure of punishment, but at the same time, hope and a renewal of the covenant. Elijah, he goes before the royalty. He goes boldly before King Ahab and gives him a shape up or get out message. And Elijah and Jezebel laugh at his face. They laugh at God. And in direct consequence, God sends a drought over the entire region. And as I was talking with the kids about this, we talked about how when you make a bad choice as a kid, your mom and dad has to get your attention somehow. Sometimes it's taking away your Kindle, your iPhone, maybe it might be another form of punishment, but they have to get your attention somehow. And this is how God was going to get the people's attention, was by sending a drought. And after this drought comes, Elijah runs off into the desert and performs miracles in the name of the Lord until God calls him out. God calls him out and says, it's time. It's time to remind the people of God just who he is and what he can do. And so Elijah comes out of the desert and he invites King Ahab. He invites all 400 prophets of Baal to come. He invites the whole nation of Israel to come to Mount Carmel for a WWE kind of SmackDown event on this mountain. And it's really an awesome story. If you ever get the chance to read it, it's in chapter 18. But on Mount Carmel, God performs an amazing miracle that knocks the socks off of the people of God. It reminds the people of God just who is boss. It reminds the people of God that God is real, God is powerful, and God is present with his people. After this miracle happens, directly after, the people of God have to get rid of this evil that has been plaguing them. So Elijah and the people of God gather up all of those Baal prophets, the 400, and the Bible talks about how they slaughter them. They have gotten rid of the evil, the thing that has been plaguing them. And from out of the corner of his eye, King Ahab is observing all of this. He is watching all of this go down. And out of the corner of his eye, he sees a cloud starting to come towards. And he smells that sweet smell of rain. And God sends rain over the region of Israel, and they get to experience God's blessings again. And Elijah is standing there on Mount Carmel. He is with his chest out. He is proud of God. He is proud of himself. He is proud that he gets to be the one who serves God. He gets to be the one who brings messages. And he is in a great place. But this is where the story starts to turn a little bit. Because King Ahab runs back to Queen Jezebel, and instead of getting rid of her, instead of saying, you're out, you're done, I got to get a new one, he tells her, Elijah killed all your prophets. He showed everyone that Yahweh is real. And since Jezebel wears the pants in this relationship, she makes the decision. Elijah has to be found, and Elijah has to be put to death. Elijah hears this decision and he's discouraged. And instead of being this big bad prophet that we have come to know, this big bad prophet that we've come to root for, Elijah runs away. Elijah is scared. Elijah is worried. He is faced with this horrible situation and he is broken. He has done what God has called him to do, and it hasn't done one thing for him. So Elijah runs. And he goes to the desert again, and he is so broken, he is such in a place of desperation that he no longer wants to live anymore. And God sends angels to tend to Elijah's physical needs, and that's where we will pick up on the story with verse 8. If you would stand with me as we read from the word. Starting with verse 8, it says, so he got up and ate and drank. Strengthened by that food, he traveled 40 days and 40 nights until he reached Horeb, the mountain of God. There he went into a cave and spent the night. And the word of the Lord came to him, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" He replied, "I have been very zealous for the Lord God Almighty. The Israelites have rejected your covenant. They have torn down your altars and put your prophets to death with the sword. I'm the only one left, and now they are trying to kill me too." The Lord said, "Go out and stand on the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by." Then a great and powerful wind tore the mountains apart and shattered the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. After the wind, there was an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. After the earthquake came a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire came a gentle whisper. When Elijah heard it, he pulled his cloak over his face and went out and stood at the mouth of the cave. Then a voice said to him, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" He replied, "I have been very zealous for the Lord God Almighty. The Israelites have rejected your covenant, torn down your altars, and put your prophets to death with the sword. I'm the only one left, and now they're trying to kill me too." The Lord said to him, "Go back the way you came and go to the desert of Damascus. When you get there, anoint Hazael king over Aram. Also anoint Jehu, son of Nimshi, king over Israel. And anoint Elisha, son of Shaphat, from Abel-Meholah, to succeed you as prophet. Jehu will put to death anyone who escapes the sword of Hazael. And Elijah will put to death anyone who escapes the sword of Jehu. Yet I reserve 7,000 in Israel, all whose knees have not bowed down to Baal and whose mouths have not kissed him." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. You know, one of my favorite Marvel movies is Iron Man 3. And you might be a little surprised because I'm normally Team Captain America all the way. And it's not that the actual plot of Iron Man 3 is my favorite, because I actually don't like the story very much at all. And it's not that a whole portion of it is set in Tennessee, which is really cool, but that's not why it's my favorite. And it's not my favorite because finally something bad happens to a superhero's girlfriend. It's my favorite because it's real. In Iron Man 3, Tony Stark, who is Iron Man, he's having a really hard time. He's not being the type of hero that we're used to seeing. He's not being the type of hero that we expect to see. And he's not being the hero that we all read about when we were kids in the comic books. In Iron Man 3, Tony Stark is having a really hard time coping with everything that has happened. Because in the Avengers, there was an alien invasion and a big black hole opened up in New York, and it was just a big mess. And Iron Man had to go in there to save the world, and he was going to die. He had said his goodbyes. He was prepared to die, but he lived. But in Iron Man 3, he is struggling with all of the things that have happened before. We see real life in Iron Man 3. Amidst all the fantasy, amidst all the superhero-ness, we see a man who was normally expected to be on a superhero high because he saved the world. We see a hero struggling. We see a hero having a hard time understanding and coping with his feelings. We see a hero who is really struggling with PTSD. But most of all, we see our Iron Man, this invincible hero. We see this hero broken. And right now in this passage, Elijah is having an Iron Man 3 moment. This hero has done great things with God. This hero who has performed so many miracles, raised a boy from the dead, provided for a widow, been a part of this humongous miracle on Mount Carmel. We see that this man is struggling, and he's not being whiny. He's not being overdramatic. He's not being just over the top. If you really look at what's happened to Elijah, what he's been going through, the things that he had to do in order to get rid of the evil that was inside of the nation of Israel, you will see that he is being real. He is really struggling with his emotions and struggling with what he's thinking. He's struggling with understanding his place in the world, what he's supposed to do next. We see our Elijah. this invincible, big, bad hero of a prophet, we see him here broken. Elijah's greatest success on Mount Carmel, it turns into his most profound failure. He's not only just in the wilderness, like physically, but he's in the wilderness in his emotions and in his thoughts and in his life. He's endured a traumatic episode with the prophets of Baal. And although he has successfully gotten rid of the people who are leading them, although he has demonstrated God's power to King Ahab and reminded the people who God is, something is still wrong. Elijah is experiencing a sense of shame and failure. After all he has done for Yahweh, after all he has done for the people of God, it's not made a difference. Because the queen is still on the throne. Baal and Asherah are still inside the temple of God. It seems like all hope is lost for the people. And it seems like all hope is lost for Elijah. And he is clinging on to his hopelessness. He is clinging on to the threats of Queen Jezebel, on to his brokenness, and he sees no way out. And as he's climbing, as God is leading him and seeking him and finding him, and as God leads him to Mount Horeb, which has another name, Mount Sinai. Surely as Elijah was climbing this mountain, he was remembering all of the stories that he learned when he was a child, all of the things that he learned about Mount Sinai. That as he's climbing, he's remembering this is the same mountain where Moses took his shoes off because it was holy ground and there was a fiery bush. As he's climbing this mountain, he's remembering this is the same mountain where Moses got to see the backside of God, where Moses got to visually see the glory of God. As he's climbing, this is the same mountain where the people received the Ten Commandments. This is the same mountain where the people entered into the covenant and they became a nation. And as he's climbing, Elijah is not in a good place mentally. Honestly, he's suicidal. And as he's climbing up this mountain, he might have been thinking, perhaps where my people, perhaps where my family, perhaps where they found their life is where I'm going to finally end mine. He is in a dark place and he gets to this mountain and God asks him, "What are you doing here?" It's not a judgmental, it's not an upset, it's not a disgusted, "What are you doing here?" It's a very honest and caring and fatherly, "What is going on, Elijah? Why are you here? Why have you come to this place?" And Elijah answers with a very honest and raw emotional answer of, "I love you, Lord, but your people haven't listened. Nothing's changed. I failed. What you called me to do, I failed. Everyone who loves you is gone and it's just me. I am all alone." And God instructs Elijah to go out and stand on the mountain because he's getting ready to show Elijah something completely different. And all of a sudden, a powerful wind shakes the rocks, shakes the foundation, and Elijah is no doubt inside a cave seeking protection, but looking, is God out there? Because he knows that God came to Job so many years ago in a powerful wind and spoke to Job. So he's thinking, is God out there? But God was not in the wind. Then an earthquake comes and it shakes and Elijah is holding on to a rock looking for God, thinking God came once to the people of God in an earthquake. When he sent the Ten Commandments down, the Bible says that the earth literally shook, the foundation shook, and he's thinking maybe God is going to speak to me in this earthquake. But there's nothing. There's no answer. God is not in the earthquake. And then a fire comes and engulfs the whole area. And as Moses is shielding his face, shielding his body, he's looking for God, thinking, God came to Moses in a fire. And 40 days ago, God came to the people of God. God came to me in a fire. So maybe God is going to be here in the fire, but there is nothing. God is not in the fire. And then there is a still small voice. A gentle whisper. And as Elijah is straining to hear it, he knows this is it. This is God. God is here answering, and he covers his face. And in that still small voice, God is not standing there fussing at Elijah. God is not standing there rejecting Elijah. God is not standing there barking out judgment. God is there wrapping his arms around Elijah, wrapping his arms around a man who was broken, a man who feels like he is a failure, a man who is lost. And God is there accepting all of Elijah's emotions, all of what Elijah is thinking, and he's there comforting him. God is there whispering to Elijah, saying, I see you. I know you. I am here. I have been here, and I will always be here, Elijah. And you know, we've seen in this story that this is a different kind of hero, that God is speaking to Elijah in a different kind of way, and this is a different kind of world. But the truth of the matter is that the same God who came to Elijah, the same God who sought Elijah out in his brokenness, is the same God who comes to us, is the same God who seeks us out when we are broken. That same still small voice that whispered love is the same still small voice that whispers love to us today. The thing that I love about the story, just like Iron Man, is that it's a real story. It is human emotion that is completely raw. It is a chance to see a real human being going before God, unafraid of what they're thinking, unafraid of what they're feeling, unafraid of how God might perceive it, and just laying all the brokenness down at his feet. Too often, I think we withhold our emotions. We withhold what we're thinking and what we're feeling and the things that we're going through. We're good Southerners. We Tupperware. We stuff. We hide, we deny, and we certainly do not go before God and tell him how we really think, how we really feel. But Elijah in this story is modeling for us, is teaching us that we can bring our brokenness to God, that we can bring our depression, we can bring our desperation, we can bring our failures, we can bring our loneliness, we can bring our anger, we can bring our fears. We can bring our frustrations with the violence and with everything going on. We can bring our broken marriages. We can bring our hopeless finances. We can bring our diseases, our cancers, our deaths. We can bring our destroyed families that are hanging by a thread. We can bring what seems like our hopeless futures, and we can bring our brokenness before God. And God is not going to look at us with a disgusted face. God is not going to yell. God is not going to condemn. He is not going to reject us. He's not going to throw up his hands and say, I can't deal with this. God comes to us in our brokenness. He seeks us out like he sought Elijah out. He calls us onto that mountaintop and says, look for me in the midst of all the sadness, in the midst of all the failure, in the midst of all your brokenness. Look for me because I am here. I am holding you like a dad, and I am telling you, I see you. I know you. I have been here, I am here, and I will always be here. And just like God, he comforted Elijah, but he also set Elijah back on his feet and gave him a new calling and gave him a new purpose. And for the rest of Elijah's life, he is marked by this experience. Depression follows Elijah everywhere. Queen Jezebel's threats haunt him for the rest of his life. But God gives Elijah something. God gives Elijah something to remind him of his constant love, his constant compassion, and his constant presence. Right after this experience, God tells Elijah to go find Elisha, who is to be the next prophet. From that moment on, Elijah is literally never alone. Elisha never leaves him. He is with him every step of the way. In fact, there comes a point where Elijah knows that he is done as a prophet. It is time for him to retire. It's time to go for him to go be with Jesus. And he is wanting to just go and wallow and kind of think about all of the things that have happened and just have another pity party. And he begs Elisha, leave me alone. Stay here. Leave me alone. Let me go and do this by myself. But three times Elisha says, no, I'm not leaving you. I am with you. you are not alone. God comforts us in our brokenness and accepts whatever we're feeling and whatever we're thinking. But much like Elijah, he gives us something. He gives us his constant love, his constant compassion, his constant presence. He gives this to us in the way of the body of believers. He gives us a physical representation of his love, of his compassion, and of his presence. We are never alone. We have not only God, but we have a body of believers, a church family, our own Elishas, who are standing with us every step of the way in our brokenness, who journey with us through the highs and the lows. People who say, no, I'm not leaving you. No matter how much you push, no matter how much you pull, no matter how much you ask, I am not leaving you. God is with you, and we are with you. When I think of brokenness, I can't help but think of the brokenness that Jesus experienced when he was here on earth. Jesus came as another still small voice. And he came so that we might find comfort, so that we might find compassion, so that we might find love and constant presence with God. But most importantly, so that we could find wholeness, so that we could find healing in our brokenness, that we're no longer just sitting here broken pieces, but that we can come to Jesus with all of our emotions, with all of our feelings, with everything that's going on, and he is going to mend us. We're going to end our time together by coming together as a body of believers and taking communion together. A meal that represents the brokenness. A meal that represents the brokenness that Jesus experienced, but it also represents the wholeness. It represents the acceptance and the love that we receive when we come before God. It represents that still small voice that is speaking to us. As our servers are coming to prepare themselves, maybe today you are going to come before the table. Maybe today you're going to come before the table much like Elijah did. You are broken by the situations. You are broken by the emotions. You are broken by the struggles and the failures that you are facing. And like Elijah, you see no hope. My prayer is that today when you come to the table and receive communion, that today you will find healing. Today you will find acceptance and wholeness. Today you would find that God is here in a still small voice, a gentle whisper telling you, I see you. I know you. I have been here. I am here. And I will always be here. My prayer is that you will listen to that still small voice. Maybe today you're coming to the table much like an Elisha, saying that there are people in my life, there are family members, there are friends, there are coworkers who are dealing, who are broken, who are struggling, and I am coming today to remind them that they are not alone, that I am here, that we are together, and that they are not alone in this. However you come to the table today, I pray that you will come and listen for that still small voice. Would you read this with me as we prepare our hearts for communion? This is the table, not of the church, but of the Lord. It is made ready for those who love him and for those who want to love him more. So come, you who have much faith and you who have little. You who have been here often, and you who have not been here long. You who have tried to follow, and you who have failed. Come, because it is the Lord who invites you. It is his will that those who want him should meet him here. Our kids are coming in, and as they come in, we want everyone to be able to come to the table and partake of this healing and this wholeness. So if you are needing a gluten-free option, let one of our servers know, and they will be able to take care of you. Servers, you may go ahead and pass out the communion.